Hello, and it's time for Jive Talking again, the Volvo Sailing Podcast. I'm Guy Swindles, and in this edition we look back at the Monsoon Cup and the World Match Racing Tour with Team Pindar's Ian Williams. We mark the passing of the America's Cup class monohull with a string of star names. New Zealand's Grant Dalton, Dean Barker and John Cutler, even if John was born in Manchester in England, along with America's Paul Caird and Australia's James Spithill, all in conversation with Matt Sheehan. And we also talked to one of the finest offshore sailors on the planet, Neil MacDonald, a five-time Volvo veteran running the rule over the next race. All this and the Volvo Sailing Podcast news headlines. First, congratulations to Ben Ainslie and Team Origin as they win the Monsoon Cup, which in turn made them the 2010 World Match Racing Tour champions. We have been chasing Ben for this particular podcast, but we lost him in Australia. We hope to have him for the next one. Meanwhile, Yandu's John Woody Winning lived up to his name, taking the fifth and last race of the 18-foot Skiffs New South Wales Championship, finishing second overall to Gotta Love It 7. In Fort Lauderdale, Rod Jabin's Ramrod took their second consecutive Melges 32 Gold Cup title, and the USA's Jenny Tulloch overcame Lucy McGregor from the UK to win the Carlos Aguila match race in the Virgin Islands. The men's division went to Alvaro Mourinho from Portugal. Well, we catch up with the very busy Ian Williams, who hot foot from finishing the Monsoon Cup, the final event of the World Match Racing Tour, is now in Miami, where we catch up with him. And, well, first of all, Ian, how's the season gone as far as you're concerned?
Well, it was a frustrating year for Team GAC Pindar. We didn't start off particularly strongly, but we pulled ourselves back into contention with a couple of good results. And after Samaritz, we were lying in second place. But it's just the last three events haven't really gone our way.
How frustrating has that been, given your success in the event in previous years?
Yeah, it has been extremely frustrating. As I say, we were lying in second place, but then we weren't invited for Denmark, so couldn't compete there. And then we had a very close tie break in Bermuda with Ben Ainslie and Adam Manoprio, and Ben progressed and Adam and we didn't, and Ben went on to win that event. And then Monsoon Cup was also frustrating. We were very 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 strong there, but just converted in the quarterfinals. We drew a boat that I don't think was quite as good as the other one we were sailing against. And despite winning three of the four starts, we couldn't finish off that quarterfinal.
What did you make of Ben Ainslie and Team Origin's performance overall? Because they didn't compete in every event and managed to time it right by the looks of things when big points were on offer.
Yeah, absolutely. They did a fantastic job of seeing it through. Very frustrating for us because, as I say, we were level with them going into Bermuda, and they went through that tie break and we didn't. And then in Malaysia, obviously, we performed very well and just couldn't make it stick in the quarterfinals. So, no, they've done a great job and they fully deserve the world title.
Now, Ian, as was just mentioned there, Team Origin sort of seemed to time it right when the big points were available. I guess you've had time to digest how your season went. Any anomalies, any interesting facts that you found when you've gone through the stats?
Yeah, well, we've been very strong at times this year. We've won the round robin at four of the seven events that we've competed at, which we've been very pleased at. We've also gone five wins out of five against the world champions, Team Origin. So, we feel we've got all the skills necessary to win the tour again. It just hasn't really gone for us this year.
Now, the tour had a bit of a revamp this year, Ian, money spent and a sort of slight rebranding. How's it been, do you feel? Has it been a success this year?
Oh, I think the new owners have had the tour for just over a year now, and I think we're now really sort of starting to see the impact of that. This year was, I think, quite similar to previous years, but I think the investment that they've been putting in we'll start bearing fruit into the following years. I think that they've certainly ramped up the TV coverage, which is a very positive thing. And I think the tour will go from strength to strength in future years.
Ian, what's the immediate future for you and Team Pindar?
Oh well, we're sort of assessing our options at the moment. I'd love to go back on the tour next year, but I have quite a few different projects that I'm trying to weigh up at the moment. It's a case of, what can we fit in and what are the compromises? So, sort of trying to balance all that at the moment, and hopefully in a few weeks' time we'll have a clear idea of where we're going.
Obviously, you want to get back in the World Match Tour. Are there any other major events occurring around the world that you wouldn't mind turning your hand to? One thinks of New America's Cups and a Volvo coming along.
It's exciting times in sailing. There's a lot of different events that I could get involved in. I'm planning to do the RC44 circuit next year with David Murphy on Ironbound. And that's a fantastic circuit. And there's a few other things that I'm looking into at the moment that I can't really say at the moment.
I understand perfectly. Half our interviews on the podcast are always something's been planned, but we can't possibly talk about it at the moment. So I do understand. Well, Ian, thank you so much indeed for your time. And not sympathies for this season, but sorry it wasn't quite the success you hoped. And good luck next time.
Thanks very much.
With Emirates Team New Zealand's victory over BMW Oracle in the Louis Vuitton Trophy in Dubai, we say goodbye to the America's Cup class monohulls and a big hello to multi-hull AZ Racing. Yachting World's technical editor Matt Sheehan was there at the wake, canvassing opinions, looking back at a key era in the history of sailing, and looking forward to what's to come. And where better to start than with veteran Kiwi, All For One's John Cutler, who was there right at the beginning.
I sailed on the first one, Japanese number 3, in 1991, I guess, is when we launched it. So, yeah, it's been a long time, long career.
What are your feelings about it as sort of the sun sets on this America's Cup class?
I think they've really served their purpose well. I really think they've been a good development class, and they've encouraged close, tight match racing, and I think you could see in the 2007 Cup that there was some great racing, and a lot of different teams could put in a good performance, and I think that was part of the excitement of the 32nd Cup.
And the boats have changed quite a lot from the first days, from the big wide tennis court type decks to pretty narrow boats.
Yep, it's pretty amazing what we all were thinking about at the beginning. Very wide boats, and we had primaries and secondary winches on as well, and it was just a huge nightmare and stuff. And then they've gradually got less and less deck hardware on, and they've got narrower and narrower, and everybody's moved more or less to the same point in the rule. And obviously a few little changes in the rule have made us go to a smaller and smaller point as well. But I think it's been a great class. I mean, there's been 100 built, something like that. It's been pretty good for 20 years.
But in those days, I mean, you were talking about the crew had a fair bit on when they had to turn the corner. In those days, these boats were considered to be really quite right up there. I mean, they were some of the most difficult boats to handle, I guess. And maybe we were more intimidated then. Maybe teams were more intimidated then. Do you think that was the case?
I mean, they are quite a handful to sail even now. They're heavy, which means the loads are really high and you're quite short-handed and the sails are big and stuff. So they're a hard work, it's a tough boat to sail. And I think that's why we still like sailing them, actually, because they do reward when you sail the boat well and you have good crew work. And a crew work stuff up can cost you the race, as we see time and time again. Even after all these years, you make one crew work mistake, that's the end of the race. So it's not something you can just pull the spinnaker in and carry on and sail back into the fleet. If you make if you trawl the chute, you're done. Mm. So it's good in that way. Good sail, 40-minute, 30-minute race, and we all say, oh, that was good fun, and everything's going on all the time. So I think it's surprising what we can all adapt to, and I think, looking forward to the future with the new catamarans, you go, oh, how's that going to work and stuff, but, it'll work. It might not work the first time, but these guys are smart and they'll figure it out, and you know, they'll make the courses work or the boats work, and you'll get, eventually you'll get close racing. And it's, you know, it took two cup cycles, I guess, before these boats were sort of refined to a point where, you know, there was reasonably close racing. Well, probably happened in less time in catamarans than we really think.
And are you looking forward to this new generation of boat?
I think it's hard to look. I mean, I like to think I'm open to change, but it's a pretty big step from you know, where we are now, and most people in my experiences. So, you know, I think probably the real worry is that it's an expensive class that they've come up with, and there's not a lot of knowledge about what you're actually going to get. So I think that puts a lot of people off, and you know, hopefully, you know, more teams will show up and there'll be more opportunities for people. But it's a big ask to pull in 60 million plus euros right now in today's economy, and you know, in the very short time frame that it's been allowed to do it.
Certainly there will be problems with the big change, but one man who thought that the current America's Cup class had definitely run its course is Emirates Team New Zealand's own living legend, Grant Dalton.
I mean, they are good for the purpose of what they're set to achieve, which is close, high-tech match racing. I mean, they're absolutely brilliant for that. It's an easy bandwagon. The Revolution bandwagon's always quite an easy one to get on because it's cool to be on it. It doesn't necessarily make it right.
Do you think they had come to the end? Or?
Oh, no. I think for sure they had come to their end.
It was just getting too expensive.
To gain compared to what? You know, expensive compared to what? I mean, there is always differences. And if there'd been another generation, and I'm not subscribing that there should have been, you would have still seen a difference. The new one still would have gone faster, you know. And it wouldn't have been much, but then it's match racing and you would have been in another version of them. But no, it's right to change.
Do you think that these boats, what do you think that these boats, this generation, nearly 20 years of these boats, actually gave to mainstream or Grand Prix yachting over that period?
I think the whole sport's got a lot more sophisticated in the years. I mean, the obvious things are things like big top mains. I mean, everyone's got big top mains. They develop grinders and, you know, winch systems develop out of the America's Cup. String drops, C-Street drops started to fall into the TP52s this year. I think keel development has gone along. I mean, in all shapes and forms that, you know, they develop. It's just lightness of systems and to run systems that are efficient come out of these sort of boats. It filters down a lot from all parts of the boat, really.
So what about Grant's fellow countryman and teammate, of course, Dean Barker?
Now, I think by all accounts the boats will be very good to sail. It'll be a lot of fun, a lot more a lot more refined than, say, an Extreme 40, which have their sort of some pretty nasty tendencies. But we're obviously paying a lot of attention to what's going on in the development. But, you know, at the moment we're still, you know, working hard to make sure we can actually challenge. You know, we've a lot of hurdles, you know, most of them financial before we can come up. But, you know, we'd certainly like to be able to participate. Yeah.
What about the rules side? I mean, that looks like that's could potentially change quite a lot with high-speed boats.
I think from what we saw in the Extreme 40, and I've only done one regatta, but in doing that you normally do sort of 25 odd races, so you see a lot of situations. It's the same thing but just at a higher speed, so boat positioning and quick judgments and everything else will be just as important. And it's just really understanding what your boat is capable of and what the limitations are when you go to two hulls. And there are differences, and there's probably a multitude of different tactics or ways you match race, but
are you going to have to relearn the rule book, do you think? Or,
well, it'll be interesting to see what they do. There's a lot of this discussion about trying to simplify the rules, make it a little bit easier to try and understand. And I guess that's sort of normal practice. Everyone talks about simplifying it, but the rule books sort of never really gets any smaller. So, who knows? It'll be, I'm sure the racing will be good.
These boats, as we come to the end of an era with these America's Cup class boats, I mean, it was this class that got you into the Cup. What are your thoughts as they sort of go out? Are you excited by the next prospect? Do you feel a little bit sort of sad that they're going? Doesn't it worry you?
No, I'm excited by the challenge ahead. You can imagine where you get to the point where you're sailing a boat that is so refined and you know, so little potential to develop that you can almost get a little bit stale. Like you come to these regattas and they're a hell of a lot of fun. You know, they're short, sharp races, they're close. You know, these boats are just fantastic boats to match race in there. 10, 12, 14 knots of breeze, you know, they're really, you know, that's right in their sweet spot. And you know, yes, they're not high performance, but they do provide good close racing. And so that element for sure you'll miss. You know, it remains to be seen what 2013.
Have you any idea how many hours you've spent on it?
I would shudder to think it's a fair few, that's for sure. But,
I mean, there's probably a part of you that thinks you actually done the time in that.
Yeah, well, without question, if the version 5 was or ISCC class was to be continued on with, it would have been hard to get motivated about trying to.
Do you think that's the same for a lot of the teams?
Yeah, I think so.
They all seem pretty up for multi-knots.
Yeah, I think, well, now you don't have a choice anyway, but I think before the decision was made, I think most people were looking forward to a higher performance monohull boat, because the RC44 provides great match racing in a high performance boat. So I think people had their head around to that, but now the decision's been made, so everyone has got their head around the fact that if you want to be in the America's Cup, which most people do, then you've got to be ready for the change.
A qualified welcome, perhaps, but one man right behind the move is a man whose voice really does count in this sport. Artemis's Paul Kayard.
You know, I'm a forward-looking person, so I think what's in front of us is extremely exciting. And, you know, the America's Cup class came on the back of the 12-meter class, and, you know, the 12-meter class was a little slower and heavier, and the America's Cup class at its time in 1992 was thought to be a high-tech, fast boat, difficult for a challenge for the sailing teams, and there were big discrepancies in design. The America's Cup's been a lot about design and technology through all of its history, and the new class represented a wide-open, clean sheet of paper where the technical teams could really show their stuff, and there were big differences back in those days. And as we went forward to the fifth edition, the fifth version 5, those differences became smaller and smaller, and the sailing teams made a bigger and bigger difference, and that was cool in and of itself. And some people would argue that that's better, it's better that way, and that's what we want to see, is the athletes making a difference. But as I said before, there's an element of technology and design that's deeply embedded in the America's Cup, and you know, therefore a change to the multi-hulls is going to open that door again and make it more than just a sailors athlete competition. So the J boats came to an end, the 12 meters came to an end, the IACC will come to an end, and even whatever we start with in the 34th America's Cup will eventually, probably after 20 years, come to its end.
What do you think the biggest contribution to racing in general that this version of Cup boats gave?
I probably really pushed forward carbon fiber technology, both in the hull construction and in the sail making. You know, when we started in 92, actually we did develop the first carbon sails during that program. I'm sure it was quite crude and rudimentary. And shortly thereafter, 1994, 3DL became a reality, and they were able to laminate sails all in one piece and orient the fibers along the load lines. And probably without the amount of spending that went on in that America's Cup class with over 100 boats built, that development would have been slower. And I think also in the same way, a lot of the techniques for boat building and probably grew a lot, again, through those 100 boats and the amount of money that got spent. I mean, I guess we probably spent, I don't know, $3 or $4 billion on this class, if you think about it.
Now, that's a lot of bucks under the bridge. Anyway, can anything be taken from the old class into the new? Well, who better to ask than BMW Oracle's James Spithill?
I don't think you can take too much from this kind. It's, you know, it really is completely different. But one thing I will say is that the wing sailing, you pick it up very, very quickly. I mean, I think it's obvious. You look at, and multi-hull sailing, you look at what Ed Baird and the Alinghi guys did very quickly. I mean, we showed, you know, we picked it up pretty quickly. And the level of these guys, you know, all the other teams that are entered, they'll be straight up to speed. You know, I mean, well, some of them are training right now, you know, while we're racing here, like Terry Hutchinson and, and those guys. So, yeah, the good guys always adapt.
Well, joined on this latest Volvo Sailing Podcast by a man who knows the Volvo Ocean Race, well, rather better than most. It's Neil McDonald, of course, who has sailed aboard Assa Abloy, Ericsson, last time out aboard Green Dragon, and plenty more before that when it was the Whitbread and Silk Cut, of course, amongst others. Neil, first things first, you're sort of looking a little bit on the sidelines at the moment from a new home. What have you made of the Volvo Ocean Race heading up to this latest edition, the teams involved and the organisation? How different is it, if you like?
I think, you know, if I had to put my finger on it, it just seems even more professional. It's become more of a business. I think the teams that are involved are highly efficient in getting what their sponsors need, and the process of design, training, and everything else has taken another level of complexity. It's become a very, very complex, involved game. Part of that makes the race even the potential of this next race being even closer. You know, the boats, the rules have changed a little bit. The boats, I believe that the hull forms themselves will be more similar than they have been in the past. So there's a potential for a very close race.
It's interesting, since the 70 class emerged, the racing has begun to get that much closer. We've had neck and neck races into ports after long legs. Is this something you expected ever to see, if you like?
I think the longer you stay with the class, the more likely that is to happen. It seems a long time ago now with the Volvo 60s, but by the end of their play, they were very, very similar, and there was incredible racing. You know, for a vast majority of the race, you were in visual contact with, you know, four or five boats the whole way around the world. And I think that will happen again if the rules carry on going down a similar format, that the boats become more typecast, everybody knows what's good and what's bad, and they just become more and more similar.
Interesting personnel involved this time as well, Neil, that a few old stagers like Team New Zealand with Grant Dalton at the helm back in for this one with the camper campaign. And people like Ian Walker and Kenny Reid so fired up after the last one that they're straight back round the world again.
Yeah, wonderful. I mean, I'm very pleased to see Grant involved again, and I think his involvement in whatever format will be great for the race. And I think it's nice to have some sort of New Zealand taste involved. There's so many New Zealanders involved. It's nice to have a campaign being centred on from there. And I think it will be a great benefit to race. I'm looking forward to stopping in Auckland, even though it looks like a short stop. We stop there, and you know, I think it will be a benefit for the race for sure, having those guys involved.
Now you're based in France these days, and we've got a French team in the race, a French stopover amongst the French sailing community. Have you noticed a little bit of a buzz about the race this time?
I must admit, I think having that Groupama involved will be good for the race and good for France. You know, there's a great deal of offshore experience in France, and they've never really had the opportunity to show their hand in the Volvo race, and this time they will, and they seem to be taking it very, very seriously, and by all accounts, they're doing a lot of training and putting a lot of effort into it. So I'm looking forward to seeing how their campaign shapes up. I'm expecting good things from them.
Now you did manage to get a spin out on a Volvo 70 in the summer on the Spanish team Telefonica in the round Britain race. How was that for you?
Great fun. Brought back some old memories. We started in a gale going downwind out of Solent, and you know the boats just tore along in a big ball of spray. It was great fun. It was like being back at school. It was fantastic. Great fun.
Obviously, there are a lot of people who can't say who they might be connected with in the next race, and you're among them, so we'll obviously skip gently over that. But I remember talking to you, I think could have even been when you were on Asser Abloy, when you said your life at that stage was revolving in four-year cycles, essentially around the race. Now, of course, it's three-year cycles, but do you still get that sort of buzz about a year out ahead of the next start of the race?
Yeah, I do. And I think a lot of people involved with the race come back again because of its attraction. And I suspect there's quite a few people in a similar situation that, yeah, one way or another, you were involved in an around-the-world cycle. And I think it's just part of the game. It is part of our life.
Now, you've had incredible diverse campaigns over the years, Neil. You've had well-funded ones, you've had less well-funded ones, you've been with favourites, not favourites. Is there any advice you would give to a young man who is heading out these days and saying, I want to sail in the Volvo Ocean Race?
That's a tricky question, but I think you've just got to keep trying. I mean, there's lots of opportunities that come, and we're not all lucky enough to get those opportunities, but when they do, make sure you grab those opportunities and use them to their full, because it is a wonderful, wonderful race, and I've been lucky enough to enjoy it several times, and I'd urge anybody else interested in offshore sailing to do the same.
Just a final thought, Neil. Obviously, we've concentrated on the Volvo race, but you do a bit of other sailing as well. What have you been up to since the finish of the last edition?
A lot of my time has been involved with my family. I have done other sailing. I've enjoyed races such as the Newport Bermuda. I've enjoyed a more cruising-based race, actually, called the Ark Race, which involves going across the Atlantic, which is a wonderful way to kind of enjoy sailing at a slightly slower pace, but introduce people who would otherwise not be able to go offshore and sail at a competitive level to sailing on boats in the open sea. So, yeah, I still do plenty of other sailing, but not as much as I have in the past.
Ah, the price of parenthood. Neil, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your time, and look forward to having a chat once we know who you're sailing with in the next race. Well, thanks very much indeed for joining us for this latest edition of Jibe Talking. Please join us next time when we'll have a special festive edition of the podcast ahead of Christmas and New Year. But in the meantime, for all things Volvo Ocean Race, remember to check in at regular intervals to www.volvooceanrace.com.